You're listening to the Study Legal English podcast, the world's first legal English podcast, helping lawyers and law students become fluent in legal English. Hello and welcome to episode 44 of the Study Legal English podcast. I am your host, Louise, and today our topic is the history of the judiciary. But before I introduce the topic, I just have a couple of announcements. Firstly, we are very excited at Study Legal English to have been nominated as a finalist in the British Council Elton's Awards, and those are awards for innovation in English teaching. Today, that is the 18th of June 2018, we are attending the awards ceremony, which, if you're interested, you can watch live at englishagenda.britishcouncil.org/events/Eltons. And that will be streamed live today on Monday, the 18th of June, from 5:30 until 8:30 PM UK time. The second announcement is that if you are interested in taking legal English classes, you now have the option to book directly via our website at studylegalenglish.com/classes. So that's the end of the announcements. So today, as I mentioned, we are looking at the topic of the judiciary, the history of the judiciary within the English legal system. So I'll be reading the first part of an article, which you can find at www.judiciary.uk. And this article is about the history of the judiciary in England and Wales. This website is an excellent free resource for finding out information about the judiciary in the UK, and I highly recommend checking it out. Today, we'll be covering the first 500 years of the evolution of the judiciary, and in the next episode, we'll deal with the following 500 years. This episode marks the first episode in the course English Legal System Module 3, Courts and Tribunals, which, of course, you can find on the Study Legal English website at studylegalenglish.com. In future episodes, we'll be giving more detail about each court and tribunal, as well as about the people who work in those courts and tribunals. So let's get started. History of the judiciary, an ancient system. When you see a judge or magistrate sitting in court, you are actually looking at the result of 1,000 years of legal evolution. It's doubtful that anyone asked to design a justice system would choose to copy the English and Welsh model. It's contradictory in places and rather confusing. However, the judiciary is still changing and evolving to meet the needs of our society. And despite its oddities, it is widely regarded as one of the best and most independent in the world. A real ordeal. Justice for the Anglo-Saxons, and even after the Norman invasion of 1066, was a combination of local and royal government. Local courts were presided over by a lord or one of his stewards. The king's court, the Curia Regis, was initially at least presided over by the king himself. Today, going on trial in an English and Welsh court is not exactly a comfortable experience, but it's far better than trial by ordeal, used until almost the end of the 12th century to determine guilt or innocence in criminal cases. Under this system, the accused would be forced to pick up a red-hot bar of iron, pluck a stone out of a cauldron of boiling water, or something equally painful and dangerous. If their hand had begun to heal after 3 days, they were considered to have God on their side, thus proving their innocence. The number of not guilty verdicts recorded by this system is not known. Another extremely popular ordeal involved water. The accused would be tied up and thrown into a lake or another body of water. If innocent, he or she would sink. There were two problems with this method, which was often used to try suspected witches. The accused was tied right thumb to right toe, left thumb to right toe, which made it almost impossible to sink. And opinion is divided as to whether those who did sink were fished out afterwards. William II, from 1087 until 1100, eventually banned trial by ordeal, reportedly because 50 men accused of killing his deer had passed the test, and it was condemned by the church in 1216. Fighting for freedom? Criminal and civil disputes could also be decided by trial by combat, with a win held to prove either innocence or the right to whatever property was being disputed. Either side could employ their own champions, so the system wasn't perhaps as fair as it might be. Trial by combat gradually fell into disuse for civil cases, although it wasn't until someone involved in a dispute in 1818 tried to insist on it that it was realised this was still technically an option. Trial by combat was quickly banned, forcing litigants to rely on more conventional routes. The earliest judges. During this period, judges gradually gained independence from the monarch and the government. The very first judges, back in the 12th century, were court officials who had particular experience in advising the king on the settlement of disputes. From that group evolved the justices in Ayr, who possessed a mixed administrative and judicial jurisdiction. The justices in Ayr were not, to put it mildly, popular. In fact, they came to be regarded as instruments of oppression. The seeds of the modern justice system were sown by Henry II, 1154 until 1189, who established a jury of 12 local knights to settle disputes over the ownership of land. When Henry came to the throne, there were just 18 judges in the country, compared to more than 40,000 today. In 1178, Henry II first chose 5 members of his personal household, 2 clergy and 3 lay, to hear all the complaints of the realm and to do right. This, supervised by the king and wise men of the realm, was the origin of the Court of Common Pleas. Eventually, a new permanent court, the Court of the King's Bench, evolved, and judicial proceedings before the king came to be seen as separate from proceedings before the king's council. Seeds of change. In 1166, Henry issued a declaration at the Assize of Clarendon. An assize was an early form of the king's council. The term later became the name for a sitting of a court. The Assize of Clarendon ordered the remaining non-king's bench judges to travel the country, which was divided into different circuits, deciding cases. To do this, they would use the laws made by the judges in Westminster, a change that meant many local customs were replaced by new national laws. These national laws applied to everyone and so were common to all. Even today, we know them as the common law. The system of judges sitting in London, while others travelled around the country, became known as the assizes system. Incredibly, it survived until 1971. Changes evolved slowly. Even in the middle of the 14th century under Edward III, there could be close collaboration between the Court of King's Bench and the King's Council. A third common law court of justice, the Court of Exchequer, eventually emerged as the financial business of the royal household was split off to a specialist group of officials. The first professional judges and magistrates. Martin de Patachel, Archdeacon of Norfolk and Dean of St. Paul's, became a justice of the bench in 1217. By the time he died in 1229, he was known as one of the finest lawyers in England. Even 60 years after his death, his judgments were being searched for precedents. Like Martin, many judges of this era were members of the clergy. Although this did not necessarily mean they were parish priests performing services, weddings, and christenings, in an era when the church was rich and the king poor, joining the clergy was often just seen as a sensible means of support. By the middle of the 13th century, knights had begun to join clerics on the bench. The first professional judges were appointed from the Order of Sergeants at Law. These were advocates who practised in the Court of Common Pleas. Lawrence de Brock, a sergeant, became a judge in 1268, starting the tradition, which lasted until 1875, of sergeants being the group from which judges were chosen. This was important because it meant that the judiciary now had real professional experience of the law before moving on to the bench. Over the years, sergeants were overtaken in popularity by barristers and solicitors, and even today, these are the groups from which the judiciary is appointed. Growth of independence. During this era, bribes and payments were common. But even so, in the middle of the 13th century, the judiciary was openly accused of corruption. In 1346, judges were obliged to swear that they would in no way accept gift or reward from any party in litigation before them, or give advice to any man, great or small, in any action to which the king was a party himself. Judicial salaries were also increased, possibly to make them less dependent on other forms of income. This didn't always help. In 1350, the Chief Justice of the King's Bench, William de Thorpe, was sentenced to death for bribery. He was later pardoned, but demoted. The First Magistrates' Courts. Meanwhile, a new type of court began to evolve, that which we now recognise as the Magistrates' Court. Magistrates' courts hark back to the Anglo-Saxon Moot Court and the Manorial Court, but their official birth came in 1285 during the reign of Edward I, when good and lawful men were commissioned to keep the king's peace. From that point and continuing today, justices of the peace have undertaken the majority of the judicial work carried out in England and Wales. Today, about 95% of criminal cases are dealt with by magistrates. Until the introduction of our modern system of councils in the 19th century, justices of the peace also governed the country at local level. Problems with politics. The 14th century saw members of the judiciary still involved in politics to some extent. For example, for 10 years, Edward III's chancellors were common law judges. In 1387, six judges advised Richard II that a parliamentary commission set up to limit his own powers was invalid and traitorous. They were all impeached, convicted, and sentenced to death, although only one was actually executed. The rest were banished to Ireland. Unsurprisingly, for two centuries after this, the judiciary kept almost entirely away from politics. Moving away from politics. During the turbulent 15th century, the War of the Roses, judges stood apart from both the houses of Lancaster and York, and were largely unaffected by the changes in government. So that's the end of the first part of this article. In the next episode, we'll be hearing the second part, so keep an eye out for that. Don't forget that as a Podcast Pro member, you can find lots of extra resources at studylegalenglish.com/episode44. For example, you can find out the difference between magistrate and judge, a very important distinction, which if you're a Spanish speaker, it's important to note that magistrado is not magistrate in English, so pay attention to these. If you have any questions or comments about this show, send an email to info@studylegalenglish.com. You know, it's always very nice to hear from you. So thanks for listening and see you next time.